6:01. Welcome. I'm going to call to order the November 16th, 2021 Town of Heath Virtual Select Board meeting. And we have a full agenda. So first is identification of callers. This meeting is being recorded, FYI. So myself, Robin Prevost-Carlson, I am here. We have Sue Lively.
Here.
We have Brian.
Here.
Pat is here.
Here and recording.
Helma.
I'm here.
Donna, first-time Zoomer, is with us tonight.
She just disappeared.
That's all right.
Oh, there she is.
Pat Heather Rowe.
You're good.
Hi, Heather. Bill's here.
Yep.
Pam.
Yep, I'm here.
And who'd I miss? Oh, Barbara Gordon. Barbara. That's, my screen is jumping as people sign on, and I know I see faces, and they're gone. Barbara here. Gordon, Board of Health. Is that everybody? All right.
Looks like it right now. Welcome.
Next item is review of agenda. We do have some actual time slotted items. That's a 6:15 Council on Aging. And then 7 p.m. we have Axon Properties. So we've tabled the minutes already on this amended agenda. And Hilma, did we have anything else we needed to add?
No, I don't think we had anything to add.
I think we have a couple of things.
There's a couple of things in the mail that you folks need to act on, but.
Okay. All right. Sue, any changes on the agenda? Any additions?
No.
Brian? No. Okay, everybody. So no minutes. That brings us down to public comments. If anybody is here that would like to take an opportunity to speak, that is an option right now. Anybody for public comments? I think most of the people here, Margaret Friedman is here now. Most of the folks here are Council on Aging anyways. They're going to speak at that point, but anybody else? All right. So we have to wait until 6:15 for that appointment. So we're going to have to sneak in a couple of other items. And we have, what do you think, Helma? What do you want to try to sneak in for 10, 11 minutes?
Well, how about the COVID protocol?
Sure. Okay. COVID protocol, COVID update. We have a meeting coming up on December 1st. Am I speaking that incorrectly?
Yes.
With the Board of Health?
Correct. Yep.
So we'll be seeing the Board of Health on December 1st. We've been invited to get an update and talk a little bit about COVID in general, reopening, if that's going to happen. Kind of just get some feedback so the two of us can work in conjunction with each other as we take step forwards on how we handle the COVID situation now and in the future in the town. I'm going to let Barbara, do we have an uptick right now in COVID or how are we with local residents?
You're speaking of Heath in particular.
Yeah.
We have had some sporadic cases. My understanding is that the last case that was identified to be related to the cluster was on December 8th. I'm sorry, November 8th. just skip Thanksgiving. Anyway, November 8th. And so Massachusetts, the way they define community clusters, they will not close a cluster until 28 days have passed with no additional positive cases that can be related to the cluster. So we've had three cases in the last week or so, one of which was traced to be related to our cluster. So the clock starts November 8th for 28 days. We're trying to count off 28 days to call that cluster closed.
Okay, great. Thank you. Brian, Sue, either one of you have any questions for Barbara while she's here? Sue, anything?
Nope.
Brian?
I don't.
Okay. Thanks, Barbara. Appreciate that. We do have one item, I think, that we were going to talk about tonight with COVID, and that's just kind of a run through select board members on how we handle employee issues, employees that have been exposed and or have been tested positive. Luckily, we haven't had that item that we've had to work with, but we have had exposure. And does everybody have, Helma, does everybody have this handout?
It should have the thing that I copied from the CDC.
Yeah.
I emailed it to everybody.
Okay. Did you guys have a chance to take a look at that or did you see that?
I did not see that. Where is it? Which?
I'm not sure. You were nice enough to, since I wasn't able to print things. I know you dropped my note. And it's not necessarily something that we have to bring to completion tonight, but it is a conversation that we just need to make sure that we're all on the same page still with following the most recent guidelines for how we handle employee cases, make sure that we're fair and even across the board with how we're handling that. And today an issue came up with how we handle, Helmo was the one who spoke with Jean about this, but how we handle, if there's a different way in which we handle an employee who has had direct contact with someone who has tested positive for COVID. No?
No.
Well, I'm not going to keep going then. Feel free to talk. You didn't even let me get to finish.
Well, it's not. Oh, well, I'm sorry. I should let you finish then. It's not if the employee has tested positive.
No, have come in contact with somebody who has tested positive. Okay. Or been suspected or suspects.
Correct. Yes. Okay. Yes.
Whether or not the employee has been vaccinated or has not been, because I guess the CDC guidelines tell us that those cases can be handled differently, whether an employee has been vaccinated or has not been. However, that being said, I believe that it is still within our purview to be able to extend upon that ruling if we so wish, meaning we can say that it does not matter whether someone is vaccinated or not, that they still need to follow the quarantine rules and the testing rules. So that is something that has come up. go ahead, Barbara.
I think that makes sense because even vaccination status through HIPAA there's a privacy issue.
Correct.
There.
Correct.
And so they don't have to reveal what their vaccination status is. So the safest thing would be to treat everyone exactly the same.
Correct.
And in some cases, you'll be imposing a stricter guideline than the CDC does if it happens to be someone that is fully immunized. But that's within your purview as an employer.
Right. And so that is what my steps today were, that we had to make a decision today about how to handle this very situation. And I erred on the side of asking Helma to follow the rules, whether the person was vaccinated. So I wanted to bring that to your attention, two of you and Brian, and just make sure that give you the opportunity to say whether you agree with that, disagree, how you see that being handled. But my feeling was one's vaccination status did not matter at this point in time, dealing with the way things are. So the person who has, so I've asked Helma and to tell the employee to follow the protocol of being tested and staying out of work. Sue?
I said before that I think we need to be more conservative than less on this situation on all of our COVID decisions. So it makes perfect sense to me that we follow those guidelines for everyone.
Okay. Brian?
Yeah, I agree with that. And there's still research being done on whether or not people who are vaccinated can still transmit carry the disease. So you might as well be more cautious than not.
Go ahead, Helma.
Okay. So if the employee gets tested at the earliest time possible, which would be late Wednesday afternoon, gets negative results on Thursday, does that mean the employee can come back to work on Friday?
Do we know what the guidelines are for that?
Well, the CDC guidelines say if you've been vaccinated, you don't have to stay out at all. You can come to work, go about normal activities, but you have to wear a mask for 14 days and then get tested 5 to 7 days after exposure. Okay, you folks are saying employee stays out, but until when? If the employee has been vaccinated, and I assume in this case that is accurate, unvaccinated is a totally different story. But we're talking about an employee who is vaccinated. Are you going to allow them to come to work after one negative test?
So I'm just reading this, what you sent out, Helma.
Mm-hmm.
And what I read in the quarantine is if you have been in close contact with someone who has COVID-19, people who are fully vaccinated people should get tested 5 to 7 days after their exposure. Fully vaccinated people should get tested 5 to 7 days after their exposure, even if they don't have symptoms. So is it 3 days or is it 5 days? 5 days.
It's 5 days. Okay, well, the person was told by the medical clinic that they are going to 3 days.
Barbara?
Yeah, Barbara's saying no. That's where I got the 3 days from.
Oh, okay, all right.
My understanding is that it's a minimum of 5 days because
that's what I'm reading.
Because of the incubation period between the time of exposure. There are cases that people will become ill within 3 days after exposure, but in terms of testing asymptomatic people who have been exposed, you need mm-hmm. to wait at least 5 days before mm-hmm. using a test for determining whether somebody is infectious.
Okay, so then we're talking Friday after at the earliest.
Sounds like it.
But that still leaves the question of if the person has a negative test, are they free to come back to work?
I would say yes. You mean instead of the 14 days, the other,
correct.
The other, yes. Well, yeah, I guess that's up for discussion. So that's for us to make a decision. Because if they're not, Barbara, go ahead.
I'm wondering whether you could not make it mandatory that people share their vaccination status with you, but make it optional at following an exposure, a known exposure, that if they test negative at 5 days and are willing to provide proof that they were fully immunized at the time of exposure, that they may return to work. And then it's up to them. Yeah. They, you know, right. they may choose right. not to reveal what their vaccination status is. And then you may choose to keep them out longer, treating them as a non-vaccinated exposure without even knowing.
Right.
I mean, it's just an option to consider.
That sounds logical.
Brian?
Yeah, I agree with that. I am confused about the vaccination status being a HIPAA thing, because lots of organizations, both public and private, are requiring people to be vaccinated and prove it.
But that's not a stance that you have formally taken with your employees at this point, correct?
Correct.
We haven't said anything about it. But yeah, I think if someone is vaccinated, then they should be under the least stringent rules. If they're willing to disclose that. If they don't disclose, then they have to be under the most stringent requirements.
I think that that's fair.
Yeah.
How do you want us to deal with that, Hilma? We're going to write that up?
Sure. You want to vote on it?
Sure. All right. So the motion will be that for town employees, if they have had contact. So is this contact with someone who has tested positive for COVID?
Yes.
Okay.
They're a direct contact.
Direct contact. Thank you. That was the word I wanted. Direct contact. Yes. If they're direct contact, then they will be required to stay out of work until they are tested at least 5 days after the exposure. And then after that test, you'll have to write this up correctly, but I'll give you the idea of it. If they have a negative test result and are willing to show that they are vaccinated, fully vaccinated, then they may return to work. If they are not fully vaccinated, they will need to stay out the full 14 days as stated in, and this is all per the CDC basically, with a little bit of our own, but mm-hmm. CDC guidelines. And
with the select board, we're at 6:25.
Go ahead.
Okay. So in terms of what we've been doing, we just are completing our senior survey. I think most everybody knows that we devised a method of gathering a group of volunteers to help us communicate directly with anyone 60 or over in town to see what they wanted in terms of activities and services from the Council on Aging. So that process is mostly done. We have had probably over 70% participation because of the way we did it, I think. And we are in the process of analyzing all that data and dividing it into age groups, 60 to 69, 70 to 79, and 80 and over. We have gotten some really, really awesome ideas for activities that we're looking at. And we've also had a lot of people say that they're interested in volunteering. So we're also starting to devise some groups of volunteers who might help people with rides or groceries or help actually put on programs. And so we're just kind of, we're beginning the process of analyzing the data and developing volunteer groups and just looking to see what kinds of activities and services people want and need, so that we can be ready when we are able to gather safely.
Great. Well, that's exciting. I can't wait to hear what you get back in the survey. That is really interesting. I think that I've always wanted to know that. So that's going to be an interesting piece for me to hear personally.
Does anybody have anything else to add to that? I mean, that's pretty much all we've been up to. We've been meeting every week. We've been, you know, that's kind of the big project that we've been working on. We're also starting to look at grant opportunities for funding for all these wonderful programs and for a program coordinator. So, and that's the next thing on our list.
It's great. Brian, questions?
I guess I wanted to talk about the senior program coordinator.
Yeah.
And we got a job description that was sent out by Margaret, and I'm not sure if we had another one or something that was in conflict, but I just had a couple of things I would add or amend it. And like on the, under general purpose, it says oversees all Heath senior programs and services provided by the Council on Aging. And I might say in coordination with the Council on Aging, develops and oversees programming for Heath seniors. And they're the person who, I mean, if they meet the requirements under desired minimum qualifications, it seems like they would be the ones with the expertise to develop the programs, you know, and bring them to the Council on Aging for discussion and approval. So, and also there are other groups in town that provide programs for seniors. And other agencies like the town nurse is not part of Council on Aging, but rather Board of Health. And there would be an interface there, certainly, but not necessarily overseen or sponsored by the Council on Aging. And you could imagine other groups, the Historical Commission or Society, coming up with things that might be of interest to seniors that the Council on Aging would want to more concentrated on senior issues than we are. And
but it would still be a posted
it's a town position. employee, you know, they follow the rules of town employees and the personnel handbook and but certainly if for some reason there was a problem and the Council of Aging said, you know, we really think some kind of disciplinary action has to be taken here or dismissal, we would certainly defer, I think, to the Council on Aging, or I would.
It's the select board that does the disciplinary procedures.
No, but if there was some problem that it would be, we would look to them to, I mean, we would certainly want to hear about it. I mean,
right. At the end of the day, if it was wasn't something that we were privy to, because, you know, if it was known by the Council on Aging, it would need to come to us. We would need to be able to act on it. We need to be told.
Like, who would do the performance review? It would be this Council on Aging. It wouldn't be the select board. We would accept that from the Council on Aging. And if we had questions, we would get back. And certainly there's due process that everyone has rights.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what I was envisioning. And that's kind of what I thought, was figuring or hoping that tonight, one, like I said, we would get an update and see what has been happening. And two, enter into this conversation of what does this position look like in the future? And the very question of which you asked, how does it come about? What are the changes we see? And then as far as the the job description, I assumed that there'll be all sorts of commentary still from different people, and we'd have to get that into one. I don't expect that we're voting on a document tonight. I expected that we would be discussing a document and seeing what are other people's ideas and thoughts and getting that information back to Helma for to bring it together for yet another review by everybody before it was accepted. That was my hope. And I mean, obviously, Brian has some comments and additions, and I'm sure you folks will too after this conversation, but that's kind of my thought, and Sue as well. Sue has to look at it from two different points of view, so.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that has to happen hand in hand with creating the job description is the town has to do whatever it does to figure out how much people would get paid, you know, how much someone would get paid for what we're talking about in the job description. That the job description and the pay would need to be finalized before we could post anything.
Right, and this would have to go, because this is, depending on, regardless of where the money comes from, this is gonna have to go, I would say, to town meeting. So unless some, right? So, I mean, we have that period of time to kind of put this together and put it before ATM. I guess it could go to an STM. I don't know that we're gonna have any, but.
No, you can't.
I can't on this one, it has to go to ATM. Yeah, well, so this has to go.
I'm sorry, well, if you're going to raise and appropriate,
right,
it's too late.
Right.
Plain and simple.
Right. So if we're changing it past what we have.
What if the wishes to write a grant that would include the salary of this position, would they still be able to move forward with that? So
once the grant was awarded, yes.
Okay. Then we could move forward with hiring a senior center or senior program coordinator. Is that what you're saying?
I don't think so, but Helma's saying that, aren't you saying we have to go to town meeting to approve the expenditure now?
No, if you're going to fund this by raising and appropriating, by taking town monies, you have to go to town meeting. If it's raise and appropriate at this point, it goes to annual town meeting next May. If it's funded by a grant, you can start advertising when you receive notice of being awarded the grant. The position does not start until the period of the grant starts.
Okay.
And it can only be for the length of time of which the grant covers.
Right.
Correct. And you have to advertise it as such.
Right. I mean, it could be in such a way that if that grant were large enough to bring that through, say a full calendar year, some type of grant. And we knew it was going to end, say, in December of 22, we could look to bring it to ATM, unless we knew that was I guess we'll never know that the grant's going to happen every year, you know, right, to cover it. So then we would have to bring it to ATM partway through and say, you know, we have X amount of grant money, but there's this chance that this might be something that we need to raise money for, or the position ends at that point. However, I don't know, we'd have to figure that out, but.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things we need to do as a select board then is to really think about once we define the particulars of the position, then we really need to figure out where it would fall in the salary scale.
Correct.
Because if we hire, and I'm not sure about this one, but do we follow this basically the same protocol for setting a salary? If it's no matter which way we go, whether we're paying a salary through a grant or whether we're paying it through town funds, it's the same process and procedure for determining what that salary should be. Mm-hmm. Right. Hilma's shaking her head. Yeah. So that's something that we need to do as a select board fairly soon in order for the COA to be able to do anything as far as looking for someone to fill the position and whether or not we have to change the job description or whether we can find something that will work.
And how much grant money we're going to want to be looking for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that was probably a bigger change on here was the desired minimum qualifications. And I know that in a prior discussion back in August, we had talked about how a requirement of a associate's degree. And that's going to bring if you're going to require that, that's going to require an uptick in the salary compared to if it's not a requirement.
Well, I think that's not unreasonable because it requires some training working with elders.
I think that we left it a little more loose than that.
There is an or an equivalent combination of education and experience. So there's kind of an or there that gives that ability for someone, say someone doesn't have an associate's, but they've been working in home care for, I don't know, 20 years or something like that. And as a volunteer at the fire department and has all their trainings, that I don't know that you'd want to oust somebody. I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I think we did that intentionally because we know that this is it's not necessarily going to be an easy position to fill because it's part-time. And we're in an area where there's not a lot of people to choose from.
We're also in a time frame where people are getting tired of their jobs, they're getting burnt out, and they might just like something that's part-time.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, we just don't know.
Not all consuming like it has been for the last almost 2 years.
But I think it makes sense to leave it open-ended a little bit.
Yeah.
I agree. It may go nicely with someone who is already working from home too, has another income, a part-time home-based income. I don't know. I think it's a great position. I love even just what's here. And I know we've got to make a little bit of ads and changes here and there, but I think it's a great opportunity personally. I love the idea.
Are there other changes that the select board noted that they would like to see that we should talk about?
Item six, it says, enforces safety procedures and regulations as established by the select board. I would add and Board of Health because we certainly have that issue right now. And also under special requirements, I think it's criminal offender's record information.
Is that the Corey
instead of offended?
Yeah.
I think there's a typo there, yeah.
Is that a Corey check?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I thought we had that in there.
We do. We just have the wrong word. We have offended instead of offender.
Typo.
Can you tell me where that is?
Under special requirements.
It's down to the bottom.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Sorry. Offender. Thank you.
We don't want to offend anybody.
Especially not criminally.
And with our discussion about the general purpose, do you feel like at the top of the page, the second thing there, under the supervision needed, is that going to be clear enough for how the responsibility is divided between the select board and the COA?
I think it is.
I think we're going to have to put it, don't the ones that,
it needs we have to say both.
Yeah, who would, right, is hired, and I think that has to be in there.
So which one is that in, Hilma?
Supervision needed.
Right, no, but where can we find the wording that you're thinking?
Well, in the job description files in the town coordinator computer.
Yeah, she'll find it. Leave that to Hilma. Give that to Hilma.
Robin, I have a few things.
Yeah, go ahead. I have some too, but go ahead.
Oh, okay.
No,
okay, under number two, essential duties and responsibilities. Number two, the last part of it line three that starts invoices expenses to the town coordinator. No, they don't. That's all I can say. That I will reword that. They submit invoices directly, not through me.
To be
to
paid.
The accountant.
Oh, okay.
Also, under special requirements, and you folks wouldn't have known about this because it's sort of brand new, but you select board had talked about, if you remember, in the office assistant, I had put the confidentiality statement in there. That needs to be in here as well.
Yep.
So I will add that. Under desired minimum qualifications, I noticed that you COA folks took out the statement about ability to communicate effectively verbally and in writing. I think that is extremely important. This is this person is going to be dealing with other people and other people who may have difficulty hearing or comprehending, they've got to be able to communicate very clearly.
And that's under desired minimum qualifications?
That's correct.
Okay.
Wilma, you can provide that word.
Yes, I will revise this job description and I'll send it out to everybody.
Thank you, Hilma.
Yep, sure. And Brian will provide me with that statement he wants in the general purpose.
Okay, as long as everybody agrees with that, I mean, that's my point, my position, that you're really hiring somebody that's going to develop these programs. Certainly, they're sitting down with a Council of Aging, but the responsibility should fall on that person you've hired to develop those programs. I mean, that's my point.
Could I have a question there, Brian?
Sure.
When you say develop the programs, do you mean develop programs that have already been established by the COA or develop programs on their own without the COA?
I was neither. I was thinking that both, that if you're developing programs, you would be having a meeting and talking about it with this person. And then when you came up with ideas, you would just point to them and say, you know, do it. I mean, that, and then they would come back with some kind of written proposal for a program and do whatever research was needed, make the contacts that were needed. And that's what I think that's what you're hiring them
yeah.
for.
Yeah. So just to be clear, Brian, so that the actual question about what kind of programs we're going to offer would be under the
correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's just the work part of it. The working out all the details should be the coordinator's responsibility. Okay. Yeah. And they may have insights because of their past experience. They may have insights into this that would be helpful to the council.
I think we're on the same page.
And I think we have that part of the job description is that they participate as an ex officio member of the Council on Aging for that purpose of communicating about programs and, you know, for there to be a dialogue about how to proceed with programs, et cetera.
Is ex officio the appropriate term there? I know we've had that discussion on other.
It's kind of, I mean, I don't know if it applies.
Well, I know recently we've had discussions on other people's job descriptions about whether that's the appropriate term to use.
You don't have to call them anything. You can just say they're required to attend the COA meetings.
I agree with that.
That's just a job requirement.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I just have a question in general. And the answer just might be no, and I just don't know, so I'm going to ask it. Is there communication at all between either the Council on Aging or this position when, like, with the police department and the fire department about services? Is there a way that, like, we have Triad, right? So in Greenfield, there's Triad that for years and years and years has been coming to all the towns. That kind of waylaid a little bit through COVID. I know they're still active. They're still trying to get involved. And I'm just curious how we, or, you know, who initiates or who puts together the communication, I guess, with our seniors and safety personnel.
I think that is definitely something the Council on Aging and the senior programs can help with. I think that we can have programs with the police to talk about issues that are important and weighing on seniors' minds, and the fire department, the same thing. I think that is definitely a function that we can put together through our senior programs. I don't know how intense it's going to be in terms of, like, I know Triad, you call them and you need any piece of equipment and they have it, and usually they'll deliver it. I don't know if we're going to get that much into it, but who knows?
I have an example from the past emergencies. When we lost power due to the ice storm, we lost it for several days, and we told asked Tim Lively, the emergency management director, to make sure that he contacted every person in town who might be on some kind of medical device that may, or anyone who was vulnerable to losing their heat or electrical power for any reason. So there is that interface, I think. I don't know how much the Council of Aging gets into those kind of details, but
those kind of details tend to be the medical ones. Are HIPAA protected? We'd certainly be willing to help you know, make phone calls or, you know, facilitate communication with people who need, who might need extra help in that kind of a situation. And I also know that, I think Barbara, you guys have a list, don't you, of people who might have certain requirements or issues?
Barbara.
Yes. In fact, we just refreshed, we're calling it a fragile elders list, although they don't have to be elders. It more accurately should be called a fragile residents list. And it was updated with the help of Susan Gruen, was already very much on top of a lot of it, but she was in touch with Tim Lively, as well as our town nurse, Claire Rabbit. And with Council on Aging to make sure that we were identifying as many people as needed to be identified. And now we're taking that list and redistributing it between the members of the Board of Health to be, well, right now we're contacting them to make sure that they're aware of COVID boosters and making sure that if they want them, you know, they can, we can help them get reservations and get their boosters, make them aware of that. But it's also, my understanding is this is a contact list for if we see severe weather coming in, we will have our list of people that we contact to make sure they're aware of weather, make sure that they have what they need, that they have at least a week's worth of medications, ask them if they have a generator, what their plans are, if they should lose power. And we're trying to coordinate this with our emergency services group as well. EDS, is that what it's called? But I don't think Tim has responded at this point. I think he's been really busy.
Well, this sounds, with my COA hat on, this sounds like something that the COA really needs to look at more closely in the future, and we should add it to our future agenda. And I'm beginning to realize as we have this discussion that there are a lot of other agencies in town. I'm really glad that Robin raised the question, because it's clear that there's a lot of other agencies in town that we really need to make contact with. These are things that haven't really been in place before. So this is all kind of new, and we're going to have to invent this as we go along. But I think that it's really clear that we need to be working with our safety people in town and our health people in town, and that there's going to have to be some joint effort in the next few months as we try to piece all of these different things together.
I think the Council on Aging is a group that can help to let people know how to respond to an emergency if they have one, you know, before there's a crisis, that you could say, well, these are the people mm-hmm. you could contact. This is how you do it. You know, these are things you should look out for. And
we have a list now of people who are interested in volunteering, and some of them are that it would be those kind of things that they would be comfortable volunteering for, you know, some to help with a calling chain if there was emergency weather coming up, or checking on medications, you know. So I think there's a lot that we can do. We just hadn't really got there.
They share information. For instance, we've just done this survey and we've learned phone number changes, people changes, all kinds of things. So if we can share it with these other groups and they share with us, we can certainly do better. Yep. Yes.
It's a great. And I know it's more than what we can do tonight, and it's more than what we put out. And I know we're getting close. Our 7 o'clock appointment is here. Most of them, I see them popping up. I just wanted to do a quick wrap up. And I know we have to get, we're going to keep meeting and we're going to have to do follow up, of course. But Brian, I'll just go quick, select board members, and then if you folks have anything in closing, and then we'll have to reschedule another meeting. Brian?
I have nothing further to add.
Sue, select board?
No. Sue, COA either.
Council on Aging, other folks. No, so we'll go ahead. Sorry, Victoria, go.
Well, just if we could get the information from Hilma so that we can kind of refine the job description for the senior program coordinator, that would be great. And and that's all I have, is just so that we don't miss anything that we went over tonight.
Great. And thank you all. That's a lot of work. Oh, Sue, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I move that the COA adjourn.
Second.
Are you making a motion?
I am.
Okay.
I seconded it.
Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Margaret.
Victoria, aye. Sorry.
So okay. Just in closing, thank you. All the work is greatly appreciated. I'm excited. It's another new step. So very exciting. Yay, all of you. Thank you.
Good night. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna, for figuring out Zoom. Okay, so Hilma, you're going to work on that. We should all send any comments we have to Hilma so that she can incorporate the updated coordinator description. And then when we can get together and agree on it, I guess in theory, then we could go ahead and get that and work through our magic and figure out what level that comes so we can figure out what the pay scale would, what grade, sorry, grade. Mm-hmm. Great, thank you all, appreciate it. So I'm sure some of you are staying and others, you may be leaving, but you're welcome to stay as you know. Okay, thanks guys. 7 o'clock appointment, Exxon Properties, crucial. We have a host community, has some folks that are here with us, I see, that are there. Joining. So welcome. I'm Robin. I'm the chair of the select board. The other members of the select board is Sue Lively. Sue's up there. And Brian DeVries. Brian's down there. Hilma, of course, our town coordinator. The other folks that are here with us, we have a handful of different folks today. We have people from all sorts of the different boards that are here listening in. And tonight, the purpose. So I'm now welcome. So let's see, who am I welcoming? Nicole. Nicole is here from council, town council from Mark's office, I'm correct? Mm-hmm. And we have Mark James, who's here, who is the attorney for Exxon, for the folks that are looking to get us to agree to a host community agreement. And they're here as guests, and simply because we were hoping, or I think everybody's hoping, that select board members, we will have reviewed this. We have two agreements to look at. We have a development agreement, and we also have the host community agreement. Hopefully you've had a chance to read through it. I know people have asked some questions already. The hope was that this evening we would be voting to accept these contingent upon the continuation of the legal review by counsel and Attorney James. So that's kind of our plan for tonight. If we're comfortable after we have any discussion and voting, I will be looking for a motion. So that is our plan. I'm going to start with you, Brian.
I don't have anything to add at the moment. I think.
Questions?
Should we be looking at the ones that we have one that's, I think when you downloaded it, shows the comments. I'm looking at the blank one right now, on the development agreement.
Yep, development agreement with a bunch of, openings left to be filled in.
Yeah.
Are we talking about what, Brian, both of them at the same time or one at a time here?
Here, you know what? I'm going to make it easier to make sure we're on the same page. Nicole, do you mind unmuting? Do you join us, please?
Sure.
Are you comfortable just giving us a little lead in so that everybody understands the differences between these two documents and what we're looking at?
Of course. So what's before the board is a development agreement, and as an attachment to that development agreement, you have a model host community agreement. And the way that we've structured the agreements in this way is because the marijuana company is purchasing, they're creating an entity to purchase the property. And the idea is that they would then lease out portions of that property to licensed marijuana establishment. And what they're looking for is a way to tell each marijuana establishment that they're seeking to enter into agreements with to lease the land, a model host community agreement so that those tenants could understand what they would be expected of from the town. And so what we've done here is we've created a development agreement that includes a development fee, as well as a timeline that the board would act on additional host community agreements for these operators that come in to lease land on this property. And it also binds the future host community agreements as to what the town can ask for it with respect to a community impact fee and a community impact fee cap. In exchange, the property developer is going to be giving the town a development fee, which is going to be separate and aside. And there's some minimums and fee structures that we've worked out in the agreement for the board to consider.
So let's start then by looking just at the development agreement to help everyone streamline that. And I guess I should say, just in case Sue, Brian, I don't remember if this was in an email or if it was in a conversation I had with Mark, but and I have to go back, Towns Mark. I believe this just went to Attorney James this week, just recently, right? Yeah. Okay. So this has been received, and I don't think at this point we've received any, I don't think there's been time to receive something back at this point, but it has gone for review.
The only comments we've received are with respect to the host community agreement that would be specifically for the developer's marijuana establishment, because what council has explained to me, and you know, they could certainly jump in and explain this better, is that they're seeking to create one entity that's going to purchase the land, but they're also themselves applying for a license with the State Cannabis Control Commission to operate on the property as well. So it would be them and some other entities that would be operating on the property.
This is Mark James. Just one small correction to that, Nicole. The entity that's going to be purchasing the real estate is not going to be an establishment. It's just going to own the real estate. And correct. Then it will lease to establishments. So
correct. So you are representing both of those, and they do have some overlap in the people that will be involved.
Somewhat, yes.
Okay.
The comments. I mean, if you download the agreement, you'll see the comments rather than just looking at it on the email attachment. And the first comment I see is item D under its legal fees and costs. And the comment was, we strongly recommend that the developer make an upfront payment for purposes of covering the town's legal expenses associated with the negotiation of a host community agreement, or additional funds to be provided immediately after execution of the agreement. This way, the town's legal budget is not affected by these negotiations in the event that the developer decides that it wishes to locate in another community, has operational issues, or does not execute the HCA. Of course, this cost could be shifted to the HCA with the operators too, but in my opinion, it would be appropriate to ask the developer to cover this cost. So, I mean, that's something to start with anyway. Did you see that on the downloaded agreement?
Yeah. And so what's your thought? Nicole, do you have anything on that piece?
Sure. So it's exactly what the comment says. We've seen in a number of communities, establishments come to municipalities, ask for a host community agreement, and then never locate in town because they were, you know, applying to a whole host of different communities and seeing where they could get agreements first, or they had operational issues, and then the cost of negotiating those agreements was left to the town's taxpayers. And so we recommend putting in a clause similar to the one that's been provided here to ensure that there is payment of the town's legal fees and costs, so that burden doesn't go on your taxpayers in the event that nothing arises after you enter into this agreement.
And in your experience, it's better to have that in the development agreement?
Yes, because right now we only have one proposed entity that's going to be operating on the property. We don't know if the developer is going to actually enter into agreements with different operators to have marijuana establishments on the property. And so you could, if you want, put that provision in your host community agreement. But the way that this was structured is for the ease of the town, the developer and the operators, that you would have attached to this development agreement, basically a fill-in host community agreement. And you would just fill in information relative to the space that the tenant marijuana establishment was going to operate, their contact information, and the real costs of negotiations, which we've essentially done already because we've put in that host community agreement, really would be on the developer, because the developer is the one who's getting the benefit of having these host community agreements to show to their prospective tenants as a means of inducing them to come on to the property and operate on their parcel rather than somewhere else.
So once, as each new entity chooses to come forth and request the host community agreement, what will we need to do at that time with each individual or each group that comes forth? So we'll take this template in essence, mm-hmm. and they will fill that out. And then is that what needs to happen for that process to take place?
So there's a section on the development agreement, section 2G, that talks about the town's obligations.
Yep.
So the town would essentially agree to the community impact fee that would be in each of the host community yep. agreements, and would agree to approve those once they're presented to the town within a certain number of days. So really it would be a matter of just reviewing the agreements to make sure that all the blank spots, I should say, are filled in, that you have the proper contact information. But there would be no further negotiation of those host community agreements. You would already have that done.
Would it be the recommendation to come back to our town council and have that reviewed at that point again, or we'd be good?
No, in my opinion, you wouldn't need to. We'll certainly alert you if there's changes, major changes in the law. If the State Cannabis Control Commission amends its regulations, or if there are amendments to the statutes that really address host community agreements, we certainly would come back to you and discuss that with you. And then we would, of course, if needed, open up the development agreement and have an amendment. There's also provisions in the draft host community agreements themselves that allow for amendments in the event that something like that would happen.
Okay, that was going to be, I wanted to make sure I was understanding that correctly as I read through that, that if something changes that's out of our control, not what we've agreed on our terms, but outside just mm-hmm. in the cannabis industry, that we're allowed to go back and make those adjustments as necessary. Brian?
Are we good with that, or do we want, I mean, I get, we generally accept our council's recommendation. And I know it has to go back to Axon for them to agree or not agree on that provision, but I don't have I agree that those legal fees should be presented in this development agreement rather than the HCA. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if anybody feels or has any other comments.
Sue?
No, I would say that it would make sense to go with council.
Yeah. You had a couple questions, Sue, that you've asked. Do you want to, you want to kind of go through those just for the rest of our, are you comfortable with your answers? Are you?
I think so. It was, and I was looking at 22, which I think fits into what I was asking, retention of regulatory authority. Because I was really questioning what happens if this establishment starts its business here with the four farmers that they've proposed, and they want to expand in the future, what kind of control the town of Heath has over that kind of expansion. If one of the farmers wants to start growing 4 acres instead of two, or if sunflower farmer comes in and wants to plant 6 acres of sunflowers on some of the unused property up there, or a whole new member wants to come in, member number five wants to come in and join, do we have any control or any say over how that happens? Or is it just automatically, because we've got a host agreement that's already been approved, does it just kind of automatically go through without our being able to say, no, we don't think the town can take any more than what we already have? Or yeah, we're really glad to see it happening. Or so that was my biggest question.
So my understanding, and I guess I'll let Nicole speak to this too, but so any host community agreement, any additional farmer of cultivator of marijuana needs to get a host community agreement, which they need to come to the select board to achieve, correct?
So under the development agreement, the select board would approve the host community agreements for the applicants that come before it. If you want to say, we are only going to, issue host community agreements for a specific number of marijuana establishments, we can add that into the development agreement. Right now, we don't have that language in here. We do have, you know, on the first page, a blank that talks about the square footage that the developer is proposing to lease out. And that if they'd like to deviate from that, they'd have to come back and amend the host community agreement. But right now it is silent as to the number of operators that could come in on this particular property. So again, if that is a concern, we can certainly work with the developer to include some language here that requires them to get a further amendment if they're going to try to license or lease the property to more than a certain number of marijuana establishments.
So if we don't put that language in, then they could, by using the same host agreement that everybody else has, they could go ahead and expand.
Only up to the amount of square footage that we already put in place here. So there is a specific line on the first page. If you look at the second whereas clause, there's a blank for a license number of square feet for the property.
Okay. And I'm not saying I would be against them expanding or for them expanding. I just want to know that, you know, when we work with the first four, I'm hoping that we will have time to see how that works out for the town before we would necessarily have growth in there to make sure that things are going the way we hope they would go. So that's the reason behind my question. I just wanted to know, you know, what our recourses were. And it may not be anybody else's concern but mine, but.
No, I think it's a legitimate question. And who is filling out that square feet blank?
So the blanks on the development agreement have to be filled out by the developer before the town executes those agreements. With respect to the host community agreements as well, each marijuana establishment would fill out those numbers and would send them to the town so that you know exactly how much square feet they're actually using and how large or how small their operation is. And again, if they wanted to deviate from that number, they'd need to amend the agreements.
Okay. So I started this by saying what the hope was for today based on what I think I was led to think we were supposed to do today, and that was to vote on this. How do we vote on that if we don't have those numbers yet? Anybody? Anybody? That's where I hear crickets.
I don't know.
I don't think we can. Can we?
The thing should be filled out before we vote on it.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I know that there's a time. I know that there's a time issue with this, and maybe we can, Hilma, if you have something you can add, and maybe
Mark. Possible as you need me to be.
All right.
And are we right, Mark, that there is a time crunch?
There is a time crunch. Just to put a fine point on what the time crunch is, we've got this property, 11 Belor Road, under contract, and our due diligence or inspection period expires next Wednesday. The whole purpose of the due diligence period is for us to be able to enter into host community agreements with the town. I guess there's a chance we could do it on Tuesday, but I would prefer if we could do something Friday morning. And I'm sorry for the imposition that puts on the select board and sister council. But like Nicole, I'll be as flexible as necessary to get this done in order to get this back before the board on Friday, as will my client.
Okay.
If I may, just one point for clarification. Has the entity been formed yet?
We're in the process of doing that.
Will it be formed by Friday?
It should be formed by Friday, yes.
Okay. Just because in my opinion that the town shouldn't enter into an agreement with an entity that's not yet formed, that doesn't have legal representatives that are authorized to sign on its behalf.
I agree.
Okay. So Friday it is. does anybody have any time issues? Other than me, I can alter most of my Friday morning a lot easier than Friday afternoon. 10 o'clock.
Okay.
Hilma, you'll post that and send that out to everybody, please. So as to make sure things are ready for that time, are there, Brian, do you have any other questions right now that you'd like to ask of either council?
I don't.
Okay. Sue?
I'm just wondering, are there any blanks that we're having to fill in? On the fourth page, the second comment right under the one that Brian read, we have to confirm the percentage.
So it's up to the town how you want to proceed. You can allow the developer to make an offer and then the board can decide whether or not it agrees. This goes for the development fee as well as for the impact fee and the timeframes. For all of the blanks, really, it's up to you. Or if you'd like to propose something now and have the developer talk to his client, or have Attorney James talk to the developer about it, you can certainly do that as well. There's really no wrong or right way to do it.
Sue?
I don't know which way is better. I just know it's a blank and that's it. Partly our responsibility to figure that number out. So I guess we just got to figure out how we're going to do that.
Brian?
I was operating under the assumption that we had acknowledged the 1.5.
For the host agreement.
For the host agreement.
Yeah.
Now
this is for the development agreement.
Sorry. I don't know what to say about that at this point.
I think, we'll go ahead, Sue.
I was going to say, is it supposed to be computed based on the same kind of criteria that the host agreement, when you set the 1.5, is supposed to, in that one, it's supposed to be applying to any cost the town might be incurring because of this business coming into town. What is this supposed to be applying to?
So the development fee could be used for whatever the town would like it to be used for. It's not meant to reimburse the town for costs that are associated with the impacts of the marijuana establishments locating in town. It is the fee that the developer is giving to the town in exchange for having those model host community agreements that it could share with its operators and the time frame for the time to execute those. If the town wants to beautify town hall, you can use that money for that. It could be used for anything you'd like.
And is that an annual payment or is that a one-time?
It's proposed to be an annual payment.
Supposed to be annual.
Are we still talking about the impact fee?
No.
It's in the development agreement.
It's right under that comment that you read to us, Brian. Yeah. It's the next comment down.
Yeah, I was looking at the paragraph down that talks about the impact fee. And that one is not to be, that one says it's not a revenue generating provision. Communities must document their impacts. And depending on the scope of operation, a 1-3% community impact fee may be justified. One you do have to justify.
I think you're looking at the wrong form.
Yeah, go to the development agreement. It's in
there. You're on the host community agreement form.
Nicole, have you done this in other towns? Is there a suggested number that would go in there? What have you seen?
We have. It depends on the size of the operation. Some communities have done $3 per square foot. Some have done four. Some have done different fee structures. We just did another one for one community where what we did was the first little I, so AI there, those numbers, the square footage and the dollar amount reflected what the first entity that they knew was leasing the property was going, how much space that entity was going to be operated. So almost similar to what was happening here in that other community, there was a developer who also was related to the entity that would be operating at the property. And so we knew we would at least have one host community agreement right away, similar to what's being proposed here. And so the numbers for that matched the square footage that the first company was going to be leasing from the developer.
Okay. Am I remembering correctly that each of these farmers, we're looking at, is it 2 acres?
100,000 square feet of canopy each for each one, yes, which works out to be just over 2 acres.
I guess I'd need a little more guidance on maybe the way to do it is to ask for recommendation on that. Have you done these before, Mark, also?
No, this is our first time doing this.
So Nicole, when you were saying like $3 to $4 a square foot, so like $3 to $4 a square foot
is $1.2 to $1.6 million. That's a showstopper.
Yeah. That's why I was doing the math. That's why my head was down.
That's why my head was down too.
I don't even want to say this out loud, but maybe somebody else will.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly depends on the size, proposed scope of the operations.
No, I get it.
We could include provisions to say, however, this shall be no more than, you know, X amount. You could put minimum, you could put caps, right? You can have a ceiling there so that maybe that's more comfortable for the developer, but ensures that, you know, if not all of the property is used as was proposed, the town is getting the benefit of the development fee. So there's a number of ways to do it. Again, there's no wrong or right way.
I was going to say,
may I suggest that you folks allow Attorney James to talk with his team and have them make a proposal that I'm sure will come back before Friday, so you folks will be able to review it before Friday?
And also submit it to town council for them to compare it to other towns similar to ours.
Right. That's kind of what I was going to say. I think we need to have a recommendation or a proposal. I guess that's a better word. I just don't want it to be like a showstopper on Friday. So I just want to be able to have a good conversation on Friday. And I'm assuming, Nicole, let me ask this question. Can we have this meeting on Friday morning? And if we need to make any changes after that meeting, we can agree to them then and there, and they can be put in place as long as we vote on those and agree to those.
Yeah, so you could certainly hold them the meeting Friday morning. You'd have to really ensure that your posting gets done right away because there is the you know, open meeting law they have to comply with. You can certainly vote on these agreements with specific changes in them. You know, you can have someone marking up all of the changes, and the vote could be to approve the agreement as marked by, and whoever's marking it could repeat all of the provisions that you're filling in, however you want to do it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So I think that would be my recommendation for this one, since obviously I think we agree in theory behind what is being proposed by council. I think Sue, Brian, and Robin agree with that. And just need to have a proposal back from, I guess, from Mark.
We can do that.
Okay. Other questions, Sue?
On the development agreement or on the
development agreement? Okay, on the development agreement, just so we can put that to bed.
Yeah, I think I'm all set there.
Okay, Brian?
For now.
Yeah, I'm good. I think there was one comment towards the end. Just town coordinator to address. Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Nicole, anything else we should be thinking about on the developer agreements?
Can I ask, do you want to limit this to a specific number of marijuana establishments that would be entitled to the model host community agreement?
If we put a limit on, that can be amended later on. Or if we put a limit on for like a year and then say we're going to revisit it.
It wouldn't be for a year the way it's structured. It would be for the number of marijuana establishments that you would, or host community agreements that you would sign.
No, I meant, you know, so like if we said that we wanted to wait a year before we considered expansion of the business.
Expansion as to the number of.
Yeah.
Well, so you'd have to have a minimum number then, right? If you wanted to consider expansion.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or a minimum number.
I'm just trying to think of different ways to be used. I'm just trying to think of ways that give everybody the best option.
Sure,
Brian.
Well, I think it makes sense to see how this works out, to have some kind of limitation, and I think that 4 were proposed initially. Well, I think I would look for a recommendation for town council to give us the language to give us some control over. I think she already said that we can approve or not approve additional host community agreements. So
No, to clarify, I can add language in there to say that after, you know, after issuing four host community agreements, the applicant, the developer would have to come back to the town in order for the town to continue issuing these model host community agreements. There'd have to be an amendment. I could put the language in there and then the board can discuss amongst itself the number and can engage in negotiations through Attorney James as well, if he wants to go back to his client after hearing how the board wants to proceed, and I can work with him on that, and then we can leave another blank for you all to fill in at your next meeting.
All right, we don't want to create an unnecessary impediment. You know, we want something that gives us some protection, but still allows, you know, if the thing is working well, it allows for expansion if that's in the best interest of everyone.
I know I asked this before. How many acres is the property?
55.
What was that?
55.
So are you offering a number, Sue or Brian, that you're comfortable with being on that for now?
I thought we were talking about four initially.
That's what was proposed. The question did come to us and asked what our feelings were if there was an additional. That did get asked to us at one point.
Like, we don't have any feelings until we see how everything works, you know, and I think if we put the number four in there, and if you want more than four, you have to come back to the town. That's reasonable.
Sue?
When we first started talking to them, they were pretty insistent that four was the right number. And this the very last time they did mention a fifth one possibility, but I guess I would like to see us say four, and then they need to, that we will consider an amendment if you know there seems to be good reason. I just want to make sure that all of this is working the way we think it's going to work before we start letting it grow bigger.
Okay, seems that's what we're looking for, Nicole, at this point.
Okay, I could certainly drop.
Do you agree, Robin? Do you agree?
I do agree that there should be a number. I think that I don't know. It would be easy for me to hear if there was a fifth. Since there is, you know, there's 55 acres total, I guess I'd probably want to know what was happening. There's 55 acres, but how much acreage is the buildings? How much acreage? You know, I don't really have a picture in front of me, you know, the map in front of me that shows how much is actually space that can be grown on versus building and all that. So I think four is definitely fair. We've agreed to that from the beginning. And as I said, when asked about a fifth, I think that I'd be willing to talk about that fifth, but I'm perfectly happy saying that, you know, after the four, it's just a conversation to make sure everything is okay, I guess. So I can support that. I don't think we're saying no. Mark, go ahead. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Robin. No, that's okay. If I may, if we're going to limit it to four, I'm not sure we even need a development agreement. I mean, we've got four operators that are lined up to come onto the property. Our thinking with a development agreement was that kind of paves the way for additional operators in the future, additional farms in the future to come on board, additional tenants, whatever you want to call them. If we're going to have to come back in and renegotiate a development agreement at that point, then maybe we don't enter into a development agreement now at all. Maybe we enter into four HCAs. And if we do have a fifth one, then we breach that topic at that time. Maybe that streamlines this whole process.
Comments from town council.
It's really a business and policy decision how the town wants to proceed. You can certainly just enter into one host community agreement now. You know, I don't think that you would be bound by the same terms for each operator that comes onto the property. It could be a process. The town wouldn't be bound to execute those host community agreements, execute them within a specific amount of time, or, you know, ask for the same impact fee or not ask for any other fees. You know, there are different types of monetary provisions that you could ask for in an agreement. So you would just be then negotiating each agreement on its own. The developer wouldn't be able to say to its tenants, this is the host community agreement that you can expect to get, and this is the amount of time that you would expect to get it in. So again, up to the town how you want to proceed. Another option that you know, might be agreeable to all parties is if you include a limit to 4 and say that the town will, you know, continue to grant host community agreements after 4 are issued, provided that there are no complaints. And if there are complaints, you know, the board will hold a meeting or there are certain things that have to be done if that's the concern.
It seems that that is the concern. I mean, I like having a framework that you don't have to renegotiate every time. But on the other hand, you want to make sure that everything is working as anticipated.
Wasn't there some benefit to that development agreement to your client, Mark, too, then, given that? Even if there was a limit? I don't know, but.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure, Robin. Yeah. You know, it's been contemplated all along that we would, I don't know if I should say all along, but as recently as the last meeting that I attended, that there would be 4 operators on this property. I think it's also been contemplated that those 4 operators would have the same economic terms in terms of the community impact fee and the other things that we discussed. From our perspective, the development agreement was in going forward. If we were to have additional tenants come on the property, the development agreement would provide a framework for those future tenants. I guess that's how we've looked at it.
I assume there's some, I'll go back to what I was saying about like the lay of the land and the way that it's, you know, property, this, that there's items, buildings on the property. I guess there's, of the 55 acres, only so much is technically, I would think, cultivation land, sure. I would think.
Yeah, my client wouldn't, there's a lot of trees on the property. There is a cleared area on the property that would be able to begin cultivation immediately upon. But there's a whole lot of this property that's still forested. So we wouldn't be clear cutting to the property lines to fill up every square inch with farms here. I don't think the neighbors would appreciate that. I don't think that other people in the community would appreciate that. And that's certainly not our plan.
Is it? Maybe I got to read just through this again, but if we were to keep the development agreement for the purpose of what this discussion was right now about future development, would it then make sense to have a limit on the future development that might be come as a recommendation from the client, from the proposer, as to how much they feel of that square footage or acreage, how much of that land they envision down the road they could see wanting to have additional farmers up to see if that's comfortable with us as select board members.
That is certainly something that I will discuss with my client.
If I may, just for a point of clarification. So are you saying that the same HCA would be to each of the 4 proposed operators automatically without a development agreement? I don't think I'm following.
Yes.
And I'm not aware that there was any board vote binding the town to the same terms of each HCA. So,
no.
And that would be the benefit of the development agreement. And that's why the town would receive the development fee in exchange for that benefit agreement.
That they'd all be the same.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and that's the benefit that I was asking a little while ago. Is there not that's the benefit to the proposer, is that right? So they have the same agreement straight through, short of any changes in just the above, out of all of our control. I guess I shouldn't say this because maybe we haven't talked about it past the 4 users. But if it's say we're 6 users, is say the 4 users we've agreed that the community host agreement, I think that we're okay that with the 1.5%, and that agreement would we felt as select board members that agreement would be the same for the first 4 that were being proposed. So. What I'm asking is that can the development agreement say, okay, so this is the proposal, this is what will be used for the HCA, whether it's the first 4 or the next 2 or 3, but can it also then have a limit as to how much, how many more there can be by square footage, how much of that property up to that amount?
We can certainly draft some language for the developer to consider that the town shall execute 4 HCAs. However, after that, you know, each year, there shall only be a certain number more HCAs granted, so a total of 8, or there shall each HCA granted after that shall be for no more than a specific amount of acres. It's up to the town how you want to do it. Yeah, again, yeah. It's a negotiated agreement, so it's however the board feels comfortable and what the developer will agree to.
Brian?
I mean, we're kind of shooting in the dark here with putting a limitation on, because you really would need to do some kind of feasibility study of the property to see how you could develop it. And, you know, that would determine what the maximum build out was.
Right.
And whether that would be any negative or have any negative impact on the town. I'm not sure that it would, but...
is that something that they would already have considered? Mark might know that. I mean, they've assessed the property. They've done their due diligence. Do they probably already have a good idea of what the potential expansion is for that property? That they couldn't go beyond a certain number, or?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if they have done that kind of analysis or not. They certainly have done their due diligence. They've physically been on the property. But I don't know if they've done that.
Okay.
Done that thought process.
Well, I guess I would feel better if we have some kind of limiting clarification, whether it's 4 or 5 or 6, or, you know, or let's start with 4 and they can go up to 6 within the first 3 years. But after that, they've got to come back to us. I don't know what it should be. I just want to make sure. I just want to protect the town interest in both directions. I mean, if we do this, I want to do it because I believe there's going to be a benefit to the town.
Okay.
And I feel like I've taken up enough time with my concern. And
it's a reasonable concern. I think the value, Robin stated what she saw as the value of the development agreement. The question that we're dealing with now is how do we make sure that we can consider each additional farmer under those terms. I mean, say we accept those terms, or the terms in the development agreement, and maybe this is to avoid having to do that at all. But I don't think we can just give carte blanche development rights to that piece of property. I mean, we have to say there could be impacts to the town if the thing was completely built out. So I don't know how to make this decision.
Well, it could
if
be
I may.
That. Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
Quiet, Robin. Okay. On November 2nd, the Select Board had a meeting, and while no votes were taken, we certainly talked about what the business terms were going to be for the host community agreements, as well as the 4 farms that were going to be located on the property. And the board unanimously agreed with those business terms, even though no vote was. I understand that. I don't want to misrepresent anything that happened on November 2nd. But for those first 4, regardless of whether or not there was a development agreement, I thought that we were aligning those businesses. I don't feel that's the case now.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think we are disagreeing with that, are we? I don't think so.
I think we're aligned in the terms, the business terms, which are basically the HCA, I think. That's what we've been discussing, right? That's what we've been discussing. And we did agree in principle and without vote that that all 4 farmers would have the same agreement, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that Select Board, I think that what we have in front of us, this development agreement, this is something new for us to review. And I think in kind of wrapping it up, it is an agreement that in essence wraps in these 4, but also others. Like Mark said, it is what allows for continued development unless we put the whatever that limit is. And I do see what's being said. Well, let me ask, Nicole, are you suggesting to us that even if we agree in concept that all of the 4 host immunity agreements will be the same, they'll all be that template, is it still town council's recommendation that we still have this development agreement, even if we had a limit of the 4?
Well, so again, it's my understanding that the board didn't take a vote that all of the 4 agreements would be the same. So I don't think the board has bound itself in any way that would mean that the board has to enter into the same exact host community agreements for the first four operators that want to locate on this parcel of land. Moreover, if you have different members, if the composition of the board changes, I don't think that absent a development agreement like this, you'd be able to bind the action of future boards. And so the development agreement was a way for you actually to do that, right? The other thing is, if you don't have this development agreement binding the board, and you have one operator or two operators that come in today and two more operators that come in a year from now, there may be additional things that you want to address. And you certainly can, in my opinion, address those in a new host community agreement with the new marijuana establishment, unless you've bound the town through this type of agreement that all of these host community agreements are going to be the same, or at least a certain number of them are going to be the same.
So if we wanted to agree that these four, because that's what we talked about before, without vote, if we wanted to vote on that and agree that these first four would have the same terms, we would have language in this agreement saying that?
You can limit this to just four.
Right.
And maybe the development fee reflects that.
Sue?
I don't know. I'm very comfortable with the first four having the same agreement, if that's what's that, but if that's the question that you're asking. I think these first four, they're all coming in together at the same time. They should all have the same agreement. I had made an assumption, which obviously was probably wrong, that new ones coming in would probably be bound to those same terms. And maybe that's not necessarily true. But I'm comfortable with the first four all being on the same.
Brian?
I guess I wondered if we couldn't just agree that the first four were the same host community agreement and then not do this now. But, after this is up and running, come back and decide whether we were going to do a development agreement like this for any additional applicant. I don't really like the idea that we would tie the hands of future boards, that they couldn't do anything about if terms changed for some reason, and perhaps there was an impact that we did not anticipate, that we wouldn't be able to address that by a future host community agreement or a development agreement that accounted for that future operator. So if we can get by with just the host community agreements for now, that's probably the best deal.
Well, I think that what Nicole is saying is that the development agreement can be limited to the four, but it at least is binding to make sure that those four are all the same. Correct, Nicole?
Yes. So right now the board doesn't have four proposed marijuana establishments. So if
it does, yes, it does.
You have four entities.
Yes. They've all been provided to Mark.
Yes.
So that's. Another option for the town, if the board wants to enter into four exactly identical host community agreements, it can. That's a decision for the board to make. This development agreement would give the board the development fee in exchange for binding itself and not engaging in separate negotiations with each of those marijuana establishments. And I don't know if the board has spoken to each of those establishments individually, if you've gotten proposals from each of those establishments. So that's up to the board as to how you want to proceed.
I guess I could buy into the development agreement if it covered, it covered these four. And then I would want to revisit, after the four were established operational, revisit terms for additional operators.
I think part of what's tying us up here is that we've just seen this development. I mean, this is all new for us too. It's not like we've had it for a couple of weeks and had a chance to discuss it before. It's a new thing for us, and we have been asked to accommodate a very tight timeline, so we're trying to balance the two, and I think that's part of our struggle. We haven't had time to come to a good understanding of what this means.
I think Hilma was trying to get a comment in here too.
Yeah, go ahead, Hilma.
Okay. Well, the question that I was going to ask is, if you disregard the development agreement, who's paying the legal fees? who's responsible to pay the legal fees? That has to be done somewhere.
It's contained in the HCA. The companies entering into the HCAs with the town would be paying for the attorney fees.
Okay. Thank you.
Nicole, did you wanna?
I mean, the other, you know, issue with multiple operators, especially cultivation operators on one parcel of land, is that if there are odor concerns or if there are concerns about waste or pesticides, it's difficult for difficult for the town to really identify which operator is violating certain provisions that may be included in a host community agreement relative to waste removal, water usage, pesticide usage, or odor control. The way it's structured here is the developer would be responsible for overseeing those and for making sure his tenants comply with certain provisions, so that it's easier for the town to figure out what's being done and what type of enforcement action it needs to take. You know, I haven't seen the plans. I don't know if they're proposed close to each other, if they're going to be separate and apart from each other, but I think those are considerations that the town should look into in deciding whether or not you want a development agreement for the type of proposal here, or if you want separate host community agreements for each of the operators. And if you do go with just plain old separate host community agreements, I do think that they, in my opinion at least, should be specific to each proposal, because you don't know if they're all doing exactly the same thing and who's going to be responsible for what and how you're going to figure out if there are any violations, which operator is responsible for those violations.
I guess I would support pursuing the development agreement for those reasons. And I would limit it to 4 for the time being.
Would there be any?
Go ahead, Sue.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I see the benefit to the development agreement for lots of different reasons. And I guess I would just like to get a response back as to what the possible concerns, and if the concern is payment, like the fee, if that's a concern, that's obviously an area of negotiation. But I do see the benefit to the development myself. Sue?
No, I was just going to ask if maybe we should go on to just discussing the details of the host community agreement and see whether, in thinking about that, it had any influence or any bearing on how we see the development agreement. I don't know if it will or not, but.
Sure, we can look at that community agreement. Sue, you want to start? You have.
Well, there was a section there was a section that I assume is new. I think it was 9-13. Am I right in thinking that? It says 9-12 have been included for the town's consideration in an effort to mitigate potential impacts related to cultivation and processing operation. And I'm thinking that those must be something that I haven't seen in the past agreement. So I don't know if those are brand new. And then there were a couple of little wording changes that they had in there. So I didn't know if we wanted to just go through some of that stuff and see where things stood. You know, like sure, on the first page, they added the word outdoor cultivation, which to me made a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I looked for things that changed. And then on the next comments came on page 5, and the glasses I'm wearing are not strong enough for this little print. So there were a couple of comments there. The annual charitable nonprofit contributions, was there supposed to be a change in that amount, Hilma? Or was that supposed to stay the way it was?
No, and that is...
That stays the way it is?
No. It stays in the HCA. However, my understanding is that the amount is to be $7,500. And that is my oversight for not communicating that with our town council.
Charitable contribution?
Yep. I think that's an understanding that was come to with Ryan.
So that's something that needs to be checked. And just above that, that's where we were talking about the, I think that's the line, that's the part for the legal expenses being paid.
Yep.
So we have to make a decision on that.
No.
On page 8, there was a comment. I wrote out company or landlord. I don't know why I did that. Well, I guess it was a question about the if it was the company or the landlord who was responsible for the equipment that's on the grounds. That's the way I read that one. And I wasn't sure what that was supposed to be. If it's each individual company, if there's four there, then each individual company is responsible for the equipment that they personally own as personal property, or is it the landlord who's responsible for it as a package deal? And then the whole issue of 9 through 12, there was a question about limiting hours on page 11, whether you're supposed to limit the hours or not. So those are all things that have to be decided.
Nicole, do you have any responses to Sue, or do you want to lead us through what ones you need from us?
Sure. So just for points of clarification, I think, Sue, you were talking about the local taxes and you wanted to know, you know, who's responsible for what. It's my understanding, and Mark, you could jump in if I'm wrong, that each operator will have its own cultivation and processing equipment that it will bring onto the property, that the land is just going to be leased as is. And so you would have the language about property taxes in the development agreement for the property. And then you have specific language here about personal property taxes in each host community agreement that would be applicable for any equipment that the operators themselves bring in.
Okay.
The provisions sections 9 through 12, those are typical provisions that we see associated with cultivation and processing establishments, some impacts that we've seen from other municipalities where these types of operations are actually up and running. Again, there are some provisions that were shifted into the development agreement, for example, putting water meters in so that you can monitor water usage, that because it seems to be more of infrastructure was shifted to the development agreement, responsibility for odor mitigation, because that's difficult to ascertain from one operator to another on a parcel like this, where you could potentially have multiple operators side by side, was shifted to the development agreement. So there are provisions in here about electric usage, water consumption, just to make sure that operators aren't using a significant amount of water. And like I said, this coincides with the development agreement that also has specific obligations for the developer with respect to some of these mitigation issues. The development agreement also has some sections, I believe, about dark sky lighting, if there's any lighting that's going to be put in. Pest management is in here. There's provisions about using natural cultivation processes and not pesticides, because there's been concerns in other communities about water contamination. And so we've just put some language in here for the town's consideration, again, based on what we've seen from these cultivation establishments that are up and running. Hours of operation, typically associated more with retail establishments, but they haven't included in agreements for cultivation, product manufacturing, depending on the location of the property and what exactly is going on. You can limit it specifically to any distribution so that you don't have trucks coming in and out of the property at certain hours, or you can limit it entirely, or you can strike it if you feel like it's not an issue in this location that's being proposed. Again, we just gave you these options for your consideration in the event that you did want to have them addressed.
I don't think water is an issue because we don't have municipal water. The water would have to be found on site. Certainly runoff could be an issue, but I think there are other environmental regulations that would govern that anyway.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, we have a lot of stuff to hear to consider before Friday morning, but Attorney James could take care of some of this stuff, like water. We know we're not going to have a water issue because the water is coming from the property. There's no municipal water or sewer involved in this. There are pesticides. I think I don't think it's legal to use pesticides for marijuana cultivation. So that's not an issue. But I think, you know, things like that, they have the answers to right now.
And hours of operation?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that's going to be a huge issue. And on a farm, you could and you could imagine, you know, being there a little more than 9 to 5. I mean, so
during harvest time, they could be there till midnight.
Yeah, I would be careful about that. I mean, you could say you don't want trucks running, you know, after a certain time of day, but anything else, I would think that, you know, this kind of operation would have to have pretty much around the clock attention.
Right. I don't think it's unreasonable to address or talk about the trucks. And I don't know how they would normally proceed with the trucking portion. I guess I don't know. I have never done that before. Do you have an idea, Mark, how they, as far as trucking is concerned?
You mean what kind of trucks and what kind of traffic?
No, like hours of operation of the trucks, like 1 a.m.?
Yeah, I don't think so. And the trucks, they use like Sprinter vans. It's not big 18 wheelers or anything like that. It's a much smaller operation than that. So I don't think they're going to be transporting anything in the middle of the night. I think that's left for daylight hours. So
if it makes us comfortable, we could put, you know, the overnight hours for the trucks and just get a response back. I mean, we could see what's reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What else do you need from us on this right now, Nicole?
So, you know, there is a section in here, charitable contributions we've covered. Under section 4C, there's a section about volunteering a certain number of educational programs on public health and drug abuse prevention. I don't know if the board wants to propose a number or if you'd like the developer to propose something that he would bind his tenants to there.
I would be fine. My personal opinion is I would be fine with a proposal from the developer. Sue?
That's fine.
Ryan?
I'm good with that.
And Mark, I think you've already said two programs.
Yeah.
Seems fair. Anything else, Nicole, we should be looking at or questioning or you need from us on this?
My understanding is that the board wanted to leave the provision about attorney's fees and costs in the development agreement and not the HCA. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yep.
No, I mean, unless the board tells me that you have questions or that there are certain provisions that you want stricken, or if there are things that you didn't see in here that you have concerns about, I think we're all set on the host community agreement. Again, you know, subject to any changes that Attorney James may have on behalf of the developer.
Okay. Sue, are you good with that?
Yeah.
For now. Okay. Brian, I know
it's a big deal.
It's a big deal. Brian?
I'm good. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we all recognize, and I think probably both Nicole and Mark can understand. I mean, this isn't something we do all the time. We're trying to do something that's completely new to us, and we rely on your help. I mean, it is just that simple. While we're trying to keep our town, make sure we do what's best for the town now and in the future. So it's a big plate that we're looking at.
Sure is.
You know, it's not something that we're used to doing. We admit that, and we are trying to just make sure we're covering all the bases. I guess I'm just a little concerned on the timing. I'm just hoping that we can get, I guess a question I have, I just always like to think of what's the worst case that could happen is that if there's a lot of feedback, Mark, back from your client, the select board won't have an opportunity to really fully all we will have is Friday to discuss it. And then we won't have a counter. We won't be able to really go back again. And I'm cognizant of that deadline. If we don't come to an agreement on Friday and there's a continuation of discussion, our next opportunity to meet would be Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, you know, even if it was put off until Tuesday night, we still have Wednesday on our contract side of things. So if we end up don't come to an agreement with the town on Tuesday, we can terminate our contract with the seller on Wednesday. Worst case scenario here. I mean, that's not anything that we want to happen.
Oh yeah, no, not us either. But I just don't want to make the assumption that everything that we've talked about tonight is going to be perfectly fine with your client. So I assume there'll be further communication.
Yes.
Should we, I really hate to bring this up, but should we post another meeting for Monday if we have to have one just for this purpose?
We
can always cancel the meeting, but we can't add it in later.
Right. Correct. We would need to get that posting. And we've been doing that for a lot of other issues right now, posting just in case.
I hate to ask the town to do that, especially since you're already having a meeting on Tuesday. So
you could also add it to the agenda for Tuesday if you have time on Tuesday to discuss it. I don't know how full your agenda is for Tuesday.
We don't have a problem adding it for Tuesday. I just don't. I am trying to be as fair as possible to that deadline as well, and as understanding.
Tuesday's not the end of the world.
Okay. All right.
If this goes to Tuesday, that's fine.
Okay. I think if it goes to Tuesday, it's simply because there's some little terms here and there that we have to just kind of clean up. But it is still our hope that we will, you know, everything will get straightened out and we'll move forward. I mean, that's I believe our intention on the select board. That is our want.
Same here. Same with my client. Absolutely. Yeah. My client loves the town of Heath and wants to be there. So, and just so you know, and Nicole, this is for you as well. My client's not looking elsewhere. They haven't entered into HGAs and other communities. They haven't. These four entities want to be in Heath and they're going to be in Heath. Because I think we're going to come to an agreement on all these things, and we're going to have a couple of agreements here that everyone can live with. So,
okay. All right. So did we do what we needed to tonight? Nicole, do you need anything else from us?
I think I have everything from you all now. It's just a matter of me connecting with Mark tomorrow, proposing some language to limit the number of host community agreements, and hopefully we can get something back before you all in advance of Friday so that you have time to digest that.
Okay. And just for clarity and to make sure there's no misunderstanding, any of that information that comes to the select board is solely for us to review, and there's no outside communication happening at that point until we meet again on Friday at the post. Just for clarity for everyone.
Thank you.
Great. Brian, anything in closing? Any last thoughts, questions?
I have nothing.
Okay, Sue?
No, thank you to both of you for trying to walk us through this.
Thank you. It took a while. So appreciate your time, both of you being here this evening with us.
Of course.
Thank you for your time.
We'll get there.
My clients, I appreciate all the effort and time that you've put into this already, and the time and effort you're going to be putting into it before Friday and, you know, perhaps Tuesday. So thank you very much.
Sure.
And thank you, Nicole.
Yep, that's what we're here for.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
All righty. Thanks, you too.
Ooh. Are we done?
I think so on that one. Thanks, Nicole. Do you need us, Nicole?
Oh, no, I didn't know if you all were having a motion to close or if you were continuing, but if you're all set with me, I will log out.
No, we have still more of this meeting.
Well, have a good night, everyone.
Great. Thanks, Nicole. Appreciate it. All right. This is a lot.
How do people do this all the time?
I don't know.
I don't know how people can do legal stuff all the time.
I don't know.
They go to school.
School wouldn't help me with this.
But they're probably sitting there going, how on earth could you teach 5-year-olds?
This is my second go round with lawyers today too.
Oh boy.
Okay.
Next. Anything, Sue or Brian, before we move on to another topic, anything else on that?
I need to change gears.
Okay. All right. Well, the change of gears is back to COVID. And before we get back into that, just for clarity, also for folks that are here, I should maybe give the rest of the meeting kind of like a synopsis of what I think is going to happen for the rest of tonight. We'll dance back to COVID real quick. We have a couple other business items that we'll touch on briefly. We probably will, there won't be a lot of conversation about Hilltown Youth Recovery. We have a little bit of an update on Route 8A. Parks and Rec is probably going to be tabled because of time. Firehouse, not a lot. I'm sure there's only a little bit on green communities. And then we will be entering an executive at the end of the meeting tonight. Before the end of the meeting tonight, I should say, we will have an executive session in regards to AT&T mobility. And once we go into executive, we will agree that we will not go back into open meeting. So we'll hold those to the end. We'll make sure we get all of our business done prior to going into executive.
Robin, I think you need to touch briefly on the lease issue too.
The what?
You want to touch briefly on...
We're doing two executives then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Two executives, clarification. So two executives. So we'll do one executive. We'll enter into open meeting again, but only for the purpose of getting into another executive meeting. And then we will not go back into open meeting. Thank you, Hilma. Mm-hmm. Okay. COVID. So we had our discussion about employees. We're all set with that. I don't have other updates for tonight on COVID. Office relocation. I reached out to get that pricing on the petitions, and it was promised to me by the end of this week. So I'll keep on the supplier for that. And I don't have anything else on office relocation. Oh, I guess we could sneak in here the generator. Last week, we talked about the fact that we had the generator coming. We took a vote about the propane, about the tanks. And we said that vote was dependent on town council's review of the proposal from Osterman. It was determined that the town is not allowed to enter into that form of a contract, long-term contract. There are a couple other issues in it. So we have proceeded. Hilma's been working on it, getting secondary and tertiary this total for the installation of propane tanks. So that's underway, and probably by next week, we'll have those proposals, I would say. Right, Hilma? I would think.
I hope so.
Yeah.
One company came and looked today and actually gave Tim and I more information. That's very helpful information. So yeah.
So more to come on that. We'll keep plotting through, and that'll come up next week. So Sue, anything from you? Other items, COVID-19, office relocation, anything there? Brian?
Nope.
Hilma?
Nope.
Okay. Okay, so Hilltown Youth Recovery Theater, nothing under other business because we're going to go into executive just on some of the lease items. Is that correct? Is there anything else, Selma?
No.
Okay. Route 8A, the bridge. So I did speak briefly with Jeff today. He has again reached out to the state bridge engineer. And is still waiting for a response as to when they're going to come and reinspect. But Jeff is going to be, in the near future, he's going to be putting signage up and bringing that down to one lane. So that bridge will become a one lane road so that he can get that plate up prior to snowfall so that they can care for it as far as plowing is concerned. So there'll be proper postings on both sides and it will become one lane until we can get further information.
Does that limit the size of trucks that can go through there?
Yes. And I asked, Jeff's working on that right now to get all of that information pulled together and the signage that will alert people for that.
Yeah. That's what I was going to ask signage would have to go in Coleraine.
Yeah. Do you have more, Hilma?
Oh, I was just going to say that I have been working with Jeff and I am preparing an SOS letter to Mass DOT
right.
with pictures and everything just to say you got to do something.
Yep. So that was the other piece of it. Yes, that Hilma's working on that letter. So that's the update on the bridge. That's where we're at. And any other questions, Sue, on that?
No, I when they make that one lane, I think it would really help, especially on this side of the bridge, our side of the bridge, if they bring the markers back further, because you can't see that the bridge is marked off until you get right around the corner. I'm just worried about people coming in both directions and meeting unpleasantly in the middle.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Just to make sure there's proper notification soon enough that of what is coming. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brian, anything from you on that?
Not on that one. I think the engineer's visit is going to be important in establishing degree of duration. I did get a call from Carl Ayers about the bridge, the next bridge up, the Burrington Bridge or Burrington Creek Bridge that's up closer to Kelly Griswold's place up
yes.
there.
Yeah.
And his engineering company is going to be submitting a notice of intent for the work that they intend to do there. So the Conservation Commission will be seeing that sometime in the near future, probably in the month of December. So we'll have to schedule site visits and review their proposal. So that's, it was too bad it's not the other bridge, but.
I know.
Could we change it?
I'll ask.
You could just change the address. They wouldn't
A
know.
For B. I know, A for B.
We'll put Burrington Brook sign.
Yeah, who's to know?
Yeah. All right.
Last week we had said something about there might be a study that was done recently on that bridge, like in the last year or two. Were we able to find any information on that last that last study?
Well, I found the inspection that was done in 2018.
And did that give a weight limit then?
I don't think so.
It was
looked a whole lot better 3 years ago.
I think that's the one I'm thinking of that I remember.
Yeah.
It would be that much. It's about 3 years ago. That makes a good sense to me. Yeah.
It's deteriorated because the inspection report included some color pictures.
Right.
Underneath and everything, and it's deteriorated significantly in the past 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Will that go into the SOS letter?
Yep, sure will.
Both years?
Yep.
Great. Thanks, Helma.
Mm-hmm.
Parks and Rec, I think we're going to table that. Come back to that one. I think we have a couple other things that we've got to really focus in on tonight. So let's come back to that. Unless anyone wants to argue with or disagree with me on that. Firehouse, no update that I have. Helma, anything that I don't know? Okay.
Nope.
And Green Communities, Brian, anything for tonight?
I'm meeting with Roger Harris on Thursday morning at the community hall. He's bringing some of the subcontractors to look at the job, the sheet metal guy and Carson Ovitt, who's going to be doing some of the carpentry work. So, and then we have a meeting posted. The Energy Advisory Committee meeting is posted for Thursday night, but it doesn't look like we're going to have a quorum. So I'm just going to leave it. And I had a couple questions that for Alyssa that I might be able to ask her,
okay. But
we won't be able to have a meeting.
Okay. All right. Town coordinator's report, Helma.
I apologize. I did not provide a written report.
I'm assuming we were going over most of the things anyways, but.
Yeah, I just spent a bit of time between the latest COVID situation, the host HCA, host community agreement, the matters that will be discussed in the two executive sessions, the Route 8A Branch Brook Bridge, that situation, what can I say? Stuff to do with the generator installation and all of that. I did also get out, Barbara Gordon had revised that letter, the arbovirus letter to Senator Comerford. And so I got that on letterhead and I emailed that out to everybody it was to go to. So that's taken care of. And that's how I spent the week.
Very good. Sue, any questions for Helma?
No.
Brian?
No.
All right. Email, part one. And I'm pulling it up because I know we have some things we have to deal with. Okay. So part one included communication from council on the HCA. We've talked about that. We have a resignation that we need to deal with. That's one of the items. So resignation from the Heath Cultural Council by Lisa Burke. who, as we've already heard, is in the process of selling her home. So we need to accept this resignation with regrets, please. Motion to do so.
So move.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Sue, aye.
Brian, aye.
Robin, aye. Okay. That was a nice letter.
Mm-hmm.
Offer for from Bill for a post office substitute. Interesting that that's right now. seems like that might be something we need more of. What do we have? Who do we have now for post office substitutes?
Well, Kate Peppard, Lorena Lubsky are the two that Charlene has been calling on the most. Art Schwanger is on the books, so to speak. However, he's given out his other responsibilities, has not been able to really help out. So, mm-hmm. Charlene can really use more help. She's had problems even, you know, trying to cover, like, say, a week or so if she wanted to take a whole week of vacation.
Yeah.
So
is there... Do they get a training or how does this happen? Does Charlene kind of give them a little rundown?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, no. Yes. Your point, they have to have, it's either 1 or 2 days of like official training.
Okay.
Under Charlene and go through all the different processes.
Okay.
That they need to be able to do.
Okay. So I'm happy to look for a motion for an appointment on this.
I move we appoint Bill Fontes to the post office to be a post office substitute.
Okay.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Sue, aye.
Brian, aye.
Robin, aye. Great. Thank you, Bill. Next is Kate, Parks and Rec. Did we have to do anything on this? This is just part of our conversation, right, that we're going to take care of. And then... concerned citizen about the marijuana and the land purchase. And we've had, Hilma did send one response. Doesn't look like she's looking for another follow-up response from the board. So I think we're good with that. Unless, mm-hmm. Sue, you feel differently or Brian,
yeah.
You feel differently.
No, I did want to say... I think her letter represents some misunderstandings that might be pretty common.
Yeah.
And so I was just wondering if there's a way, especially to help people understand what the process is that has to be gone through. If there's some way to get some information out to the public about that, because we don't want that misunderstanding to grow.
Helma?
Yeah, well, I should have mentioned this. I apologize as part of my report, but it wasn't. If you and the company can reach an agreement about the HCA and the development agreement, the next thing that happens is they have a community outreach meeting that's already been advertised in the Greenfield Recorder. It is posted on the town website. I will also print out a copy of the notices. I'll put them on the bulletin board. That's really the time for the community to attend and hear like the presentation that the four farmers will do. And excuse me. And part of it will be explaining the process that they have to go through with the town. And it's a time that people can ask whatever questions they want to. It's not up to the select board to explain to the town townspeople the whole process. It's up to them. It's their responsibility to explain it. And that's
their responsibility to explain what they're doing. But what I'm saying is that I think it would be nice if we could find a way to let the townspeople know that these are the steps that have to happen. They have to have this community. They have to have this meeting. They have to go to the planning board. They have to go to the conservation commission. They have, you know, whatever those steps are, they have to get approved by the state. I just think that.
But that's what I'm saying. That's their responsibility to answer people's questions. What all do you have to do? What's required of you? That's up to them to answer.
That's true. But I think not everyone is going to be at that hearing. And I agree with Sue that we should have some kind of a statement about it. And we should start with a town meeting vote that approved or allowed this sort of thing to happen in town, in the town of Heath. So I think we have to work on that, because I think there'll be a lot of people who have questions and they're not going to be at the hearing.
You're just talking about questions in general about not just this group specifically, but in general, the process for which someone must take who wants to either cultivate, process, sell, whatever they choose, how they accomplish that in any town.
That's right. Yeah. And that we did, in fact, vote on this at town
meeting. Yes, right. Does that go? Does that go on our website?
It should have gone in the Heath Herald, but it could go on the website too, I suppose. Or, you know, the other issue we are going to deal with in executive session, maybe something we want to at some point do the same thing with, you know, say, you know, this is the law, this is the, you know, these are the steps that we go through in reviewing situations like this. And just everybody knows what the score is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have several really big issues on the table in front of us. And I just feel like we don't have a good way to communicate to the public what's happening. And I'm painfully aware of how information can get spread and grow and change and misrepresent what's really happening. And I just wanted to bring it up that, you know, I don't know if a mailing would be helpful, but we've got the, you know, the Hilltown Theater things. We've got the green communities that people are always concerned about and interested in. We've got the marijuana. We've got the poll hearings. We just have so many big things on our agenda. And I don't want, it just bothers me to think that people might have inaccurate information out there and that
I think we need to remember that our jobs is to do that work, and we are bound by certain rules and regulations for which we can act on and which we cannot act on, and we're bound and each one of our decisions that we have to make, there's all sorts of accompanying information that comes to us that is what creates our decisions, whether they're liked or not liked. And one job, certainly as select board members in my mind, is that we get the information out in the best way that we can. However, there is some level of personal responsibility if somebody is interested in knowing what's going on to attend our meetings, to read the minutes, to do any of those items as well. We did, you know, revamp our website, and we're putting as much information as we can on that website. So there's some level of responsibility for an individual to check the website if they have that ability, that capability, and that willingness. And then I guess, I mean, the Heath Herald, like Brian said, you know, that's another avenue for us to make sure that those statements and those reports that we send, that we try to cover as many items as we possibly can in that to provide information. You know, mailings, we could do mailings. We could do mailings every month. We'd have so much information that we'd be sending out.
Well, I think the point is that somebody has to provide the content.
Right.
You know, we need to do that. We need to compose something that is going to go on the website or whatever venue. But I think it probably is a good idea to do that, you know, try to explain what the process is and what the law is.
I agree. I think it just, you know, to Sue's comment about how to get the word out, I don't think you ever get the word out to everyone unless they take the responsibility to seek out the information directly from us, because you will never touch every person. We've tried it, and it's painfully difficult, but mm-hmm. And at some point we do what we can, right?
Yeah, Facebook takes care of that for us, I guess.
Facebook. Yeah. It's not Facebook anymore, I thought. I don't know, because I don't do Facebook, but
I don't either.
Everybody's going to call it Facebook, whether it is or not.
I guess. Yeah.
I agree. I don't want to take, we got too many other things tonight, but yeah. I just wanted to get that out there, that that letter just made me think about how easily misunderstandings happen.
I agree. And we get those, you know, we frequently get letters like that.
I think when it comes to the steps that one needs to take for, in this case, the establishment of a marijuana cultivator, producer, any one of those, retail, whatever it is, that's pretty specific. You know, there's rules. There's actually probably easy to read rules and regulations that we could probably take from and put them right on the website and connect people. I mean, because it's set for us. We're told what we have to do, or, you know, what steps we, maybe we can just pull that from the website and have a link for people that are really interested in learning what those steps are, and having an easy fact sheet. And then if people are interested in more information, where to go to find that. But, you know, I agree. We probably can put that together. Not too difficult. It wouldn't be too difficult with the help of counsel. And I would assume, you know, just taking a look at those in the website, the, I can't remember which one it is that we were looking at before. I actually think when we voted this in, when the town voted it in, Brian, think that there was all sorts of backup information. Some things may have changed today, but I thought we had some fact sheets that were very factual about what somebody had to do in order to obtain a license to be able to take part in any part, whether it's cultivation or retail, whatever it is. I think there's fact sheets that are like really easy to read. And maybe we should get that info and attach it to the website, you know, put it all right on the website. I think that would help us kind of put the ins and out that you're talking about, Sue, like what steps somebody has to take to get to that level, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we can work on that, especially for this one, quick, sooner than later, because it's in our face right now.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to look back. I think I have some of those fact sheets. I think I know where they are.
I'm impressed.
Nah, I remember because I had to do some learning then too. I didn't really know much about it, I got to admit. I didn't know much about marijuana. I was kind of a newbie there. Okay. Anything else on part one mail? Part two mail is, pull it up. So part two is a letter from the library folks. And it was just a reminder for us of their interest in space at Jacobs Road as we're making decisions how we use this. And then the other part of part two is our grant award from the Recycling Dividends Program. And the amount is $4,200, if I'm right. Am I right? $4,200.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
You need to vote. That's something that has to be signed, the acceptance. So okay. You need to vote that you're accepting it.
Okay. I have a motion to accept the Recycling Dividends Program grant of $4,200 from the Sustainable Materials Recovery Program.
So move.
Second.
Further discussion? All in favor.
Is there any reason not to? No. I can't. Okay. Sue, aye.
Brian, aye.
Rob and aye. No, it comes our way every year.
I think you're basically also agreeing to use the funds in the ways that,
yeah,
that they
that's right.
It.
Yeah. And per it's the terms of the grant. Per the terms of the grant, yes.
Yes.
And anything else in the mail?
A short?
Yep.
One short thing this week.
Okay.
Do you want to set the agenda for the next meeting before we go into executive or after we...
Yeah.
No, we can do that.
Whoops.
So the next meeting.
At this point, let's see, Building Use Committee is scheduled to come in.
Okay. And what are we hoping to complete at that point? Is it just a check-in or are we?
I don't know.
Well, you let us know that.
Ben's gone. I mean,
let us know that.
Mainly it's a check-in, but I think they had a couple of things they wanted to bring up. But yes, I will let you know.
All right. And my assumption is we'll have all of these other items again.
And more.
Yep.
Ditto. And probably nothing, hopefully nothing else, because we'll really need to bring some of these executives to conclusion if we can. Okay. Okay. Folks, anything else for open meeting for right now? Sue?
Nope.
Brian?
Nope.
Hilma?
Nope.
Okay. Then to clarify, we're going to enter into an executive session
for long-term lease of space. I'll start that in a second. We're going to come back into open. We're going to close that executive, come back into open. Then I'll ask for us to go into executive for AT&T mobility litigation. And once we're in that executive, we will not go back into open meeting. Is everybody okay with that? Sue?
Yep.
Ryan?
Yes.
Hilma?
Yes.
Okay. So number one, I'm looking for motion to go into executive session pursuant to General Law 30A, Section 21A6, to consider the purchase, exchange, or lease, which this is a lease, of real property. And I, as the chair, am declaring that an open meeting may have detrimental effects on the negotiation position for the town of Heath. And this is for the deliberation and strategy for entering into a long-term lease of space with 18 Jacobs Road, municipal building with Hilltown Youth Recovery Theater. So I'm seeking that motion.
So move.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor, roll call vote, please.
Sue Lively, aye.
Brian DeVries, aye.
Robin Provost-Carlson. Okay, folks, we're going into executive. So I've got to ask people to sign off, please. Thank you for joining us.